This is a replay of the Thursday night, November 16th WGN show. We started around 10:30. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, and unless sports preempt us, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from One VoIP for the world's best customer service. It's One VoIP. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe. It's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, a little earlier than expected. So, yeah, I on the website said, tune in after 11 Central Time. Well, so I might be talking to myself for the next little while, but if you want to join me, that's fine, particularly if you want to vote on the world's worst hit records, because you got less than a week to do that. Remember, the polls close a week from yesterday, so Wednesday, next Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving, and then we tabulate them all, and on Thanksgiving, we play them back. Not all of them. We don't torture you, but while you're eating your turkey, we'll be playing your turkeys, your world's worst hit records, and all we ask is that the records be hits. It can be any decade, any genre. You can vote as often as you want, but only once for the same song. So if you nominated, you can't second it. If someone else nominated it and you've seconded it already, you can't second it again. Yeah. But other than that, an unlimited amount of votes. So that's the deal on there. Looking for something to do this weekend? Well, you might go to Seattle. It is. Yeah, we've talked about this in the past, D.B. Cooper, but it's CooperCon. And it was Carol who hipped me to the fact that starts tomorrow in Seattle. Now, as you know, CooperCon is all about the hijacking that D.B. Cooper, whoever he might be, pulled off in 1971. And he's never been found. And so the stories keep going. But apparently this year there's going to be new information since 1971. Now, firstly, let's be honest here, just talking about Father Time, the likelihood that D.B. Cooper is still with us is not high, because this was 1971 and he was already, estimated to be his late 30s or something along those lines. So the chances are good. He could be, but assuming he survived the hijacking, he parachuted from the plane. But he might have. Now, over the years, there's been a lot of speculation about where he is, because, of course, since nobody ever turned up, and a very small amount of money did turn up, but for the most part, off without a trace. And that, of course, makes it a delicious crime for people to have every conspiracy in the world about. But it turns out that this year, there's new information. Apparently, not far from where the jump took place. You know, he hijacked the plane. They flew to Seattle. He demanded, I think it was $200,000, and they gave it to him and took off again. And he claimed he was going to take the plane to Mexico or whatever, but no, he jumped out around Oregon. And everybody knew the location of that. But beyond that, now a tantalizing discovery. And, I know some about it, but of course they'll be talking about every detail at CooperCon, and I'm sure they'll have many press releases to share as far as that goes. Now, what do I know about this? Well, all right. Apparently, in a dense blackberry bush overgrown area in a 3/4 mile long trench located within 1 mile of the spot that a portion of DB's ransom money was found in 1980, there's been another discovery. And apparently, the search of the trench was difficult because it's on private property, for one thing. But what ultimately was found was a tattered white flat sheet. Now, why is this important? Well, because when you look at the testimony of witnesses, including a flight attendant, she claimed that he wrapped the ransom in white cloth. Now, they have it's a polycotton white flat sheet purchased from a Kmart store between 1964 and 67. They know that. And they did an analysis of the white flat sheet component fibers. Now, what they were trying to find is whether anything was a match to D.B. Cooper's clip-on tie, which was found previously. And that was purchased from a JCPenney store in 1964, or possibly 65. And so the comments from witnesses, I say, the flight attendant described seeing him wrap the ransom in a white material. And then another witness, and in fact multiple witnesses, described him carrying a paper bag aboard the jet, which was easily able to accommodate a flat sheet and a lot more. So given that the flight attendant saw him wrap the $200,000 ransom in a white material, and given that nobody's sure what was in the paper bag, but certainly it would fit a white flat sheet and the ransom money, and the location of the discovery, just within a mile of where he jumped, causes a lot of interest. So what's going to happen Saturday at CooperCon is they will be revealing what the analysis discovered. And the analysis is interesting because the FBI apparently had clip-on tie for some time, and apparently were not very willing to share it, including all sorts of FOIA requests and things like that. But ultimately, it was gotten, and they were able to analyze it. And so now, will it in fact match? And so that's the deal there. I was looking at some of the events, and I don't know what happened to them here. Yeah, that's right. Before the show started, I was looking all about, as well as, by the way, in 2024, they're having additional CooperCons criminal and crime. And what they're looking at there is not only D.B. Cooper, but all of the other unsolved crimes. Yeah, to the point where we know what they took or what they did. We last saw them alive, and no one's seen them since. So as far as the schedule, it all starts, I say, tomorrow with such sessions as parachuting from an airliner and the copycats and hiding in plain sight. And the FBI agent Larry Carr will be on site answering questions and things like that. And then Saturday, that's the day, the tie analysis and the major new update and reveal. Yeah, did the sheet match the tie? And one of the passengers is going to be there live as well, so that'll be interesting as well as discussions of suspects and more. Then Sunday, more on the found money, the analysis of that. And Skyjacker, they have a Skyjacker, who Martin McNally, who will be appearing live and I guess answering questions as well and maybe weighing in on what he thinks about D.B. Cooper. So that's the event this weekend if you can go to Seattle. And it is fascinating. I think now 52 years later, it has caused everybody to who is aware of this to be interested in, will we ever resolve this? Okay, it's not as big as the JFK scenario, but it's out there, and it sounds like a good time will be had by all. 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. You can vote on the world's worst hit records, should you like. Or if it's on your mind, it'll be on mine, providing it has absolutely no significance whatsoever. Though we probably will discuss the harrowing crash in on I-70 outside of Columbus with a chartered bus full of high school kids going to an education convention in which has since been canceled because of what happened, but Columbus State Capitol, and about 9 a.m. Here's the bus, and it's got over 60 kids and the driver. And behind it is an SUV with a teacher and two parent chaperones. And what happens next? Well, The NTSB is on the scene trying to piece it together, but it looks like a semi completely rear-ended them, pretty much decimating the SUV and just tearing the heck out of the bus as well, which, of course, plowed into things that were in front of it. And then there was yet another another car and another semi involved, and it is quite the mess, to say the least. And if you've been following that, particularly if you see some of the pictures and stuff like that, just absolutely harrowing. And I'll be very very curious to see what comes of that. I was starting to mention this last night, but what was most interesting to me wasn't all the comments online about the incident itself, but the number of retired professional drivers who were saying, "I wouldn't drive today." And one of the themes that came up again and again was how aghast these individuals were at the amount of people who are texting and driving, who are completely distracted, who are obviously distracted. And two of them who commented said that's exactly why they left. They just weren't willing to put their life on the line for that. And we've talked a lot about that that's a problem, but I think it might be an even bigger problem than people realize. And it's not just texting. I contend that the smart dash is pretty dumb stupid when you have to look at it in order to do certain things while you're driving. Of course, some things you can do on your steering wheel, like change the radio station or whatever, but there's many things that basically you're going to look at that screen. I don't know. So that was an interesting subtext as well. And of course, we have 8,432 stories from James on the South Side, who sends us links. So we'll get to some of those coming up. And your calls, 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio.
Yes, man, Mosquito, he don't ever take it slow. Well, naughty, y'all can call me Mosquito, but my real name is Mr. Naughty, y'all can call me Mosquito, but my real name is
Mr. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Of course, those are the Cadillacs. It was Karen in Tennessee who had requested that and said, play that for Scotty. He loved the Cadillacs. That's right. And last night we talked with Jimmy P, who said, play The Girl I Love. I think it might have been the night before. The Girl I Love by the Cadillacs, because I know Scotty loved that too. Well, we played The Girl I Love last night, and now we have played Speedo. And yeah, you don't have to twist my arm to play anything that Earl Speedo Carroll was involved in. So 888-876-5593, 8888-Raleigh. You know, later they had kind of an update of that Speedo is back. So maybe we'll get to that before the end of the night. And, of course, your votes on the world's worst hit records. Keep them coming, because it is a cumulative total. So if you heard something that you know you hate, don't feel like, oh, it's been voted on, I don't need to call. Yes, you do, because it's a cumulative total. All right, so James on the South Side, what's happening tonight, James?
I'm hanging in here, ankles a little better, so not quite there, but it's better.
It takes time, especially when it's ligaments and all that stuff. Just takes time.
Yeah. Now, I hadn't heard as much about it, I guess, mainly because the big story here was about the it seemed like the CTA was having stuff, running into stuff, although actually the one accident they had nothing to do with. Somebody ran into them.
Well, right. So,
yeah.
And as you were hearing David Jennings say already lawsuits in the first one that you're referring to.
Yeah, the up there. And let's put it this way. The The train car that was damaged. Okay, here's the thing. Since they're in a pair, they're always in pairs.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be out of service for a while.
Yeah.
And most likely they might be detached. The one that wasn't damaged will probably be. And because this was from an earlier company, from a different company, from the one that they're building the 7,000. Okay. I don't think they're going to be able to get any help getting it repaired. And if they don't know if there's like stuff that's been messed up that they can't fix.
Well, I think you're right about all of that. But I think the first question on everybody's mind is how did this happen? What was this snow removal device doing on the tracks? Was it where it should be? Was it where it shouldn't have been, on the same track? And of course, they're both moving in the same direction, but at a much slower pace when it comes to the snow removal device. So my first question is, how did this happen? Is this human error? Was this automated? I don't know.
I think, let's see, somebody up in the control thing was obviously not paying.
Well,
and you got to wonder if maybe the Texan, maybe the wheat, maybe some other substance.
Thinking that. I don't even know yet in terms of that whether there was a human involved, because so much these days are automated. Yes, I know absolutely there was a train operator, and he was among the most severely hurt as far as that goes. But is there human oversight, or are these things now computerized and automated?
Well, you know, I'm not going to say for certain on that.
Yeah.
I know I have gone from the Evanston part, when the Evanston train comes down coming into the yard. Now the Skokie comes from a different track coming from underneath.
Uh huh.
And usually now theoretically, the snowplow, it's okay. You got one, I suspect, since this was like 10:30, maybe they would have maybe moved it so they could, like when they were taking cars out of service, train cars out of service after the rush hour, maybe, I'm just guessing.
I don't know,
okay,
obviously.
And they had to get,
obviously, and the so NTSB will be on the scene, and it'll be a long time to discover. But what I don't know, and maybe if somebody is listening who works for CTA might know, is, again, how much of these processes are automated? How much, you know, we're talking, obviously, the first thing that comes to mind is human error. But is that the case, or are there things that are computerized to the point that no human would have had the oversight? And then, of course, clearly the driver of the conductor of the train was, as I say, seriously hurt. And but he saw it before he slammed into it. But we assume that there was nothing he could have done to stop.
Yeah, and the funny thing, from at least from what I've over the years, unfortunately, they've had their share of accidents in that yard. There have never been rail cars that have ended up never coming back.
Right, exactly.
They ended up being drunk.
Right, into the great abyss. You're 100% right about that. It's going to be interesting, because as these lawsuits continue, I think all of this will be brought up in court, and we'll know about more. But it is disturbing. You, however, have ended the hour, and gee, we haven't even gotten to any of your other stories. So if you can, call me back toward the end of the show. We'll discuss a few more, and thank you.
Okay.
All right, good deal. So, that is. So I know there's a Positrain control deal, and that's federally mandated. So that would be computerized. But, I want to know more about how could this happen. We're going to get to Mike in Florida right after the news. Don't go away, Mike. He's got votes on the world's worst hit records, and I hope you do too on WGN Radio.
I hardly ever thank the stars above for sending me your very precious love. You'll never hear me say a prayer, but thanks to someone way up there who gave me such a lucky break. Oh no, darling, only with every breath I take. And every time we have to be apart, I hardly ever find you in my heart. And when it comes to thinking of the thought of losing all your love, I never worry how my heart would ache. Oh no, darling, only with every little breath I take, every little step I make, only with every little beat of my heart, and every single minute I'm away.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Well, it was different than the duets he'd been doing with George Jones, but that's Gene Pitney, Every Breath I Take. That was Goff and King, who wrote it, and Phil Spector, who produced it, 1961 on Music Corps. And that was a request from Jimmy P. So happy to play that. 888-876-5593 is 8888-R-O-L-L-Y-E. And Mike in Florida has some votes on the world's worst hit record. So what you got for me, Mike?
Okay, how about The Captain and Tennille, Scrap Love?
Yes, a fine choice. We always play the trilogy because as bad as Captain and Toenail was, when you hear the version by the original Willis Allen Ramsey or America, you say to yourself, maybe the Captain and Toenail weren't that bad. But it always does well, and I'm sure it will again this year.
Okay, and let's see. Oh, Brownsville Station, Smoking in the Boys' Room.
Yeah, that's been moving up the charts for us. I'm not sure why, but it has been. All right. What else?
Oh, and David Lee Roth, I Ain't Got Nobody.
Oh God, yeah, painful. All right, yes. All right, all wonderful choices. Anything else?
Question, why do they call it Chicagoland?
You know,
I hear that like everywhere.
Yeah, and I think most places have nicknames, like the Southland would be Los Angeles, Southern California, or the Metroplex would be Dallas, Fort Worth. So if you're in Louisville, you're in Kentuckiana, you know. So I think most places have some nickname like that. So that the question you're asking is, where did they get Chicagoland? That's an interesting question.
Because, I mean, I've heard it way back.
Well, right. You know. Well, I believe you have to go to the 1920s, and you got to go to the Chicago Tribune, because Colonel McCormick, Robert McCormick, the media mogul, allegedly credited it. Now, I don't know that that's true, because they're fighting words with that. There's a lot of people who say, well, I'm not sure it was him. But we know that Chicagoland went at least as far back to when he was running the Tribune. So I'd say now it is absolutely over 100 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, so I'll go with McCormick. Why not?
Learn something new all the time.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, but you know, virtually every area has one of these. You know, so you know, and I don't know in any of them that we can say for sure of the origin. But we know people have been saying Chicagoland for over 100 years, particularly car dealers. But anybody who's trying to reach out to the Metro will use it.
Oh, here's another song for you, Ringo Starr. You're 16.
Oh, yes. All right.
And Phil Collins, let's see, You Can't Hurry Love.
Okay. All good. Good. I like this. Now, going back to McCormick and the Chicago Tribune, if you remember, the reason he was calling it Chicagoland was to make it bigger than life, because the city was serving the surrounding states. And five of them, actually. And whether it was grain or timber or livestock, the bottom line was Chicago was responsible for a lot of the revenue in the surrounding states. So that's where, supposedly, he came up with this. Now, there are those who say, not true. We can go back to the McHenry Plain Dealer in 1949. So I'm not sure. I guess you can research it and see if there's anybody before that. But that the McHenry Plain Dealer kind of makes you wonder if it was McCormick. So I don't know. Like I say at the start, I don't know.
Okay. Very good. Yeah, thanks. I really appreciate that.
Sure. Sure. My pleasure. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't think we think of it as five states today, but I do think we think about it as eight counties. You know, what, Cook, DuPage, Will, Lake, McHenry, Kane, Kendall, Grundy. Want to count Lake County, Indiana? All right, let's add that to it as well. Then there are others who say, well, if you're counting Lake County, you got to count Porter and LaPorte and Newton and Jasper. Well, and then while you're at it, Kenosha County, Wisconsin, that's got to be in there too. We could go on and on and on. I don't know. All right, so 888-876-5593. Jan is in Dallas. What's up tonight, Jan?
Oh, nothing too much. Blessings to you and John. I've got three requests, a question, and a song. Yesterday by the Beatles.
Ah, I'm with you there, by the way. If I could vote, I think I'd put that on my list, but very good.
And the Muskrat Love.
Oh, yes. It's doing well, isn't it?
Yes, it really is. And I think I'll do the Christmas Jingle Bells by the Dogs.
Oh, the Barking Dogs.
Yeah.
Okay, yes, of course.
And that Gene Pitney song, Jimmy Church and I seem to have a lot in common. Do you know who does the background on that? That's beautiful.
Yeah, well, Phil Spector produced it, but I'm guessing that they did that in New York. In fact, I can almost guarantee it because Gene Pitney was living in Connecticut at the time. So I don't know, but I will try to find out. I may be able to do that.
It's one of my favorite parts of that song. And a request sometime for Al Wilson and Show and Tell.
Okay. All right. I'll write that down. Yeah. Yeah. Al Wilson did one of my all-time favorite records. It wasn't a hit. It was the first thing that he released, and Who Could Be Loving You, which is just a wonderful song. And it never was a hit, but should have been. But yeah,
I'll
Show
look
and
it
Tell.
Up.
Yes, yes. Absolutely. Oh, well, John said you don't have a computer.
Correct. I'm doing this on landline phone.
My. And so you're listening on the radio.
I guess that's what this is. It's Well, I can call this particular number, and it gives me choices.
Really?
And I push number 4, and I get you.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's fascinating. What's the number?
Well, let's see. Let me think. It's 1-8-8, let's see, is that right? No, that's you. It's 1-1-3-4-1 796 3-3-1-1.
Wow, and you got choices where you can select from what, 1 in 9 shows or something?
Well, some are not online right now, but you're number 4, and there's 2 or 3 that are news kind of people, podcasty people, and then there's one that plays old
radio shows. Oh yeah,
stuff.
Yeah. I'm looking for this. This isn't coming up. I was hoping if I punched in 3-4-1-7-9-6-33-11 that I'd hear it. I'd see it online, but it's not coming up as meaning anything.
641.
641, not 341. 641. 641. 7-9-6. Let's try that.
7-9-6-4-1-7-9-6. I think it's 3.
Well, I'm going to need a little more help before I can look this up. So if you ever actually think about it, let me know.
I'll call John back and give it to him.
Okay, sounds good. Now I'm curious. All right, thanks. Good deal.
Okay.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it, Jan. All right. So how about that? Yeah. Well, back in the day, of course, radio stations all had listen lines, and you could, if you had the number, you could dial in and hear the programming. And it was much to my demise when I was a child, because, of course, back then calls were like $5 for the first 3 minutes and $1.99 for every minute thereafter. And I started to collect these things in junior high. And it all worked well until that night that I dialed in. And I'll never forget it because I know the station I dialed in because, oh, man, that was where I found out that a Western Electric phone hit over the head would not necessarily knock you out, but it would hurt. But the deal was it was Kim in Denver, and I fell asleep. And so It was like a 7-hour phone call. But nonetheless, the listen lines, other than that, were a lot of fun. But I don't know what Jan is hearing. And we'll find out, because that'll be interesting. All right, we'll get some votes from Chris in Greenwood, South Carolina, I think. Or we'll talk about something else. Mark is in Aurora. And Johnny in Austin. So all this coming up, and room for you two right here on WGN Radio.
Oh, baby, you're a nag.
Nag, naggity, nag.
You're a nag. Shop and buy me a roast. Mm-hmm.
When is your nagging ever gonna stop?
Mm-hmm.
You always seem to be a blow in your top.
You're a nag. All the dishes and don't talk back.
When I married you, you were so sweet. Now you give me the bread and you take all the meat. You're always screaming, hollering loud.
Oh, buy me a ticket to the nearest cloud. You're a nag.
I don't know what to do, you make me mad.
What a nag.
And when I leave this place, I'll sure be glad.
You're a nag.
You work with me, I'm just a like a whore.
You're a nag.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. All right, well, that's who backed up Gene Pitney. I should have thought of it, and because he used him so often. And that was Phil Spector, and he produced this by the Halos, Nag, 1961 on 7 Arts. But the group was Al Cleveland and J.R. Bailey and Arthur Cryer. In fact, Arthur Cryer wrote a Nag, but Harold Johnson. The deal was, and Bailey, J.R. Bailey later went to the Cadillacs. But anyway, they were session musicians, and a lot of stuff they did was for Morty Craft. And along the way, they got aligned with Phil Spector. And you'll hear the Halos on Pretty Little Angel Eyes. Oh, truly a fine production. You know, I never liked Phil's wall of sound, but before he got to that point, I thought Pretty Little Angel Eyes was just magnificent. And Every Breath I Take, Gene Pitney. You'll also hear the Halos on Barry Mann's Who Put the Bomb at the Bomb Shabam Shabam. All right, so that's the deal. Should have known that off the top of my head. What is wrong with me? Oh, yeah, the list is endless. 888-876-5593. Chris is in Greenwood, South Carolina. What's up, Chris?
Hey, what's up, Riley? How's it going?
All right, how about yourself?
Yeah, I'm just chilling in old Greenwood. I'm just going to give, like, a little thing about two NBC affiliates that's celebrating 70 years on the air.
Okay.
In my state. And also, I like to get some off my chest, too, after that.
Okay, as long as it's not about anything important, we'll do it. So what are the two NBC affiliates in South Carolina?
Okay, I'll read it to you. Once upon a year, 1953, there were two NBC affiliates that I grew up watching signed on in my proud state of South Carolina. The wonderful Iodine State, TV10, and Columbia, and SWIS, and
uh-huh.
Your Friend Sport, YFF, Channel 4 in Greenville.
Okay.
Signed on. And also, here we go. WIS signed on Saturday, November the 7th of 1953.
Uh-huh.
WYFF, huh?
I say, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, WYFF 4 signed on Thursday, December 31st
okay.
in 1953 at mm-hmm. WFBC,
mm-hmm.
serving the giant of the southern skies over 70 years. The two South Carolina NBC affiliate stations grew and grew from news desks to eye in the sky helicopters, live weather radars, the Doppler radars, Saturday morning children's cartoon shows from Mr. Knows It, Joe Penner, the Monty's Rascals, Monty Dupuis, weeknight news anchors from Ed Carter to Carl Clark, Susan Alday to Carol Clark, who went through three last name changes while she was at YFF since 85. David Stanton to Michael Cogdill, Judy Gatson to Nigel Robertson, weatherman from Jim Gandy to Charlie Gertz. He said it would. Ben Tanner to John Sethridge, sportscasters from Joe Daggett to J.D. Hayworth, Rick Henry, who was the first African-American sportscaster in the state of South Carolina, to Jeff Hart. 10-4 had similar syndicated common ground over the years, from Maury Povich to Oprah, Kelly Clarkson show to The Cosby Show, new WKRP to Regis and Kathy Lee. As a senior at Emerald High, class of 04, I've watched one NBC daytime soap that WIS and WYFF was Days of Our Lives, when Marlena, as Deidre Hall, became the notorious Salem Stalker serial killer. Ever since then, I became hooked on the soap along with Passions until they moved to the one-on-one DirecTV in 2007.
Okay.
And it was off the air in 2008. Thank you, WIS and WYFF, for 70 years on the air, entertaining and informing us South Carolinians to suit our needs. I wish you, both of you Peacock stations in the Palmetto State, 70 more years of live local breaking news. Your viewer, Chris Whiteman.
All right, all right. Now, when WYFF signed on New Year's Eve 1953, what were the call letters?
WFBC.
That's absolutely true. Fifth television station.
And Norman Duncan was the first news anchor.
Yes, yes. All right, hang on a minute. Don't go away. We're going to find out about the news, speaking of WYFF and WYS, and, of course, nothing better than WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. That's Wilbert Harrison, Let's Stick Together, 1962 on Fury. Brian and Joliet a while ago wanted to hear Let's Work Together and said that was the early 60s. I said, no, what? No, it was 1969. Well, then I realized, oh no, he's talking about Let's Stick Together. First time that came out, it was about making a marriage work in 1962, like I say, on Fury. Then in 1969 on Sue, he turned it into more of a kumbaya feeling, Let's Work Together. And I don't know if Brian had heard that one, but now he's heard them both, if he's listening. Well, he will hear them both, because I will play Wilbert Harrison after after Walter's wonderful commentary, which I know you don't want to miss. So 888-876-5593. You're talking to Chris in Greenwood, South Carolina. And so, okay, you'll know this. What does WIS stand for?
The Wonderful Iodine State.
Yes, absolutely. Wonderful Iodine State. I don't know why, but of course, a lot of radio and television stations decided W must stand for wonderful. But Iodine State, well, there is a lot of iodine in the soil, but I'm not sure that that I would pick it. As you know, WIS was the third television station in Columbia, and the first station in the South in the state was in Columbia, WCOS. But of course, it only only wound up on broadcasting till about 1956. So, what I want to know, who was the second in Columbia before WIS?
WNOK.
Absolutely, Channel 67 at the time. Now it's 19 LTX. Really good, really good. Of course, when we talk about TV stations and we talk about, you know, who's first, second, third, number two is in Charleston. Who were they?
WCSD.
Absolutely right.
And WCD, which is WUSN.
Yeah, good deal. So, absolutely. And it was an interesting time because, of course, even though it's early television, there were real issues about who gets the V's versus who gets the U's, because you only, you know, have basically 12 V's, channel 2 through 13, and then everybody else has U's. And back then, you know, it was basically 14 through 83. And the deal was the Federal Communications made an exception in Columbia, so you wound up with a couple of E's, which is nice. So there.
Yeah. Because, you know, Myrtle Beach, they had only one TV station.
Yep. Well, you know, it's a wonder.
It's
a wonder they had any television stations at all, because, as you know, it wasn't a very large area, and it wasn't unusual that many areas of similar population sizes wouldn't have a station.
Mm-hmm. Right. They didn't have their own ABC affiliate till November of 1980, which is WPDE, Channel 15, and that's a UHF.
Yeah. Well, interestingly, the wacko FCC plan, it was called 2.5 to 1, and the two networks were CBS and NBC, and then the one was the non-commercial, like public television or, you know, educational television. The half was ABC, because it was the weakest network at the time, and that's why ABC wound up with so many U's.
Yeah, because, you know, our ABC affiliate is WLOS out of Asheville, and that stands for Wonderful Land of Skies, and that's Channel 13.
Yeah.
And they both signed on in 1954, BTW, which is a CBS affiliate, and 13 was ABC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they was always ABC. And Channel 40, which is in Anderson, South Carolina, used to be WAIM. And it became a dual CBS-ABC affiliate.
Right.
And then it went independent until 1979. It went off the air for a while, and it became WAXA. Yeah. And it was our original Fox affiliate in 86 until the owner died in 88. And WHNS, which is Fox Carolina to this day on 21, became the Fox affiliate. And after that, Channel 40 went off the air and went back on in 91 as a dual affiliate for WLOS, the simulcast and ABC shows, until 95 when it became WFBC, which was Channel 4's callers when it was C40.
Yeah.
And it became a WB affiliate, which is WBSC.
Right.
And then the My Network TV affiliate, which is My 40.
Yep. Well, and, you know, the problem with U's, as you know, a lot of them went off the air, was they were very expensive to run, because the U does stand for ultra, ultra high frequency, and the power bill would choke a pony. So it was tough. Not to mention, of course, the reception wasn't great in the early days. So, interesting stuff.
When 21 signed on in April of 1984, it was an independent station, and it had a lot of viewing coverage, both North and South Carolina.
Well, and it...
And 40, it had a weak signal. It couldn't pick up in Asheville.
Yeah. Well, again, how much power you're running, that's what it comes down to, and how much money do you have to spend for it. When they were originally doing the allocations, Columbia had two VHF licenses, and the guy in Spartanburg, Walter Brown, he was just absolutely upset, and so he went crazy, and that's when they moved Channel 7 to Spartanburg and allowed for WSPA-TV. But Columbia winds up being kind of sandwiched between Charlotte, which had 3 and 9, and Myrtle Beach, like you say, Florida.
Yeah, it was like a donut.
Right, it was a donut. That's exactly right. Florence,
yeah,
Myrtle Beach.
Augusta,
Yeah.
They had Channel 6, WJBF, and Channel 12.
Right, in Augusta.
That's PHF.
Right,
Charleston had 2, 5, 4, and 7.
And
Florence had 13.
Originally 8. It became 13 later, but it was originally 8. But yes, then Savannah had 3, 9, and 11.
Yeah, so. And Charlotte had 3, 9, and I think that's the 2.
Yeah, that was the 2 in Charlotte.
The Upstate had 4, 7, 13.
Yeah, that was Greenville, Spartanburg, Asheville, right. And so that created the donut hole. And ISTV was fortunate. They had the B.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people could pick them up.
That's
and
right.
And the thing about it, you know, the Labor Day, like, they had the MDA telethon back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they had the Darlington race, and it was on ABC at the time. And the people in Columbia couldn't get it because they had the MDA Labor Day telethon preempting it.
Right.
And they had to watch it on different ABC affiliates.
Oh, yeah. No, that was not unusual, actually. But what's also interesting at this point, when you're in an area that is fairly rural, and because of South Carolina is a fairly small state, it wasn't happening as much as some of the states in the West. That's when early CATV came about for people who weren't going to have local affiliates. They could, you know, sign up with the guy who owned the hardware store who was basically had the tallest antenna in town, and he'd, for $1 a month, give you the local stations from, you know, neighboring communities. So there wasn't quite as much in South Carolina.
And the thing about Channel 7 is when it signed on in 1956, there were two stations that tried to keep it off the air, and was WAIM Channel 40 and WGVL, which is a DuMont affiliate channel,
right?
23.
Interesting times, to say the least. And then we didn't even get into Wilmington. They had ECT. So, yeah.
Yeah, Channel 6 and WWAY, Channel 3.
Right.
WECT was NBC. And, you know, they have a low-week CBS affiliate, which was WJKA, which was UHF, and then it moved to Channel 10, which was a low-power station.
Right.
It was UPN and CBS, and then when UPN folded, it became fully CBS, and then it moved to WWAY sub channel, and it became an independent station because their sister station is WRAL, and when RAL dropped CBS affiliate in 2016, it became NBC.
Yep. Good stuff. Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, obviously, you're certainly a student of this, to say the least, and that's great.
Yeah. You remember that game show Pressure Luck?
Oh, yes.
You know, WBTV Channel 3 didn't clear Pressure Luck at all when it was on CBS.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but Channel 7 did. WFPA cleared it, like, shortly after 1984 when Michael Larson won all that money.
Yeah.
That had the two-part episodes. They claimed that he cheated.
And may well have, but the idea of not seeing all the shows, that was not an unusual discussion, to say the least. The strangest market for that, without a doubt, was Presque Isle, Maine, because they only had one television station, and because of that, they were the CBS, NBC, and ABC affiliate. And this happened in the 60s, that they basically the town council would vote on what they were going to show. And at some point in the 60s, they voted against The Tonight Show. And I think that every member of the Presque Isle Town Council was voted out of office for that. So, yeah.
So, you know, Channel 4, when it was WFBC, they didn't air the Monkees.
No.
I don't know if they became the Bible Belt or they became the textile mill because they didn't clear the Monkees at all.
A
lot of people's upset about that.
Sure, there's a lot of reasons, some of them that are obvious and some not so. But it was also interesting, you know, of course, WIS, where we're talking about Channel 10, had a really, really nice signal, to say the least. And you could be in Augusta, and Channel 10 would come in better than the local station, which was Channel 26. And
because Channel 26 was WATU.
Right, and AGT.
It was VHF. And they came on in 1968, and then it went off the air for a few years, and it came back on. They didn't have much NBC coverage until, you know, WJBF was originally NBC and ABC.
Yep. And not unusual at all. Like I say at the in the beginning, when there weren't three commercial outlets in a market, you would have stations that would carry two networks, usually one primary, the other secondary. But often interesting to see what they decided to carry. Good, good stuff. I love it. All right. Now, did you have a
More thing.
What?
No, Search Tomorrow wasn't on at WIS when it moved from CBS to NBC.
Okay.
The Search Tomorrow was preempted.
Yeah. So, yeah, that happened. Yeah, I think that was like, 82 to 86, I think, the Search for Tomorrow
thing. Yeah, the year I was born in 1986.
Right. I remember hearing all about that. And,
they didn't clear Let's Make a Deal from 1990 to 91.
That was the entire run for the revival of Let's Make a Deal. They just passed.
And so, WIS didn't clear it, but Channel 4 did.
Yeah. Yeah, which presents an opportunity when that comes out. And the interesting thing about IS, even though they're supposedly 24 hours, I think they continue to sign off in the middle of the night.
Yep, until like the mid-90s.
Right.
Because it was owned by the Cosmos Broadcasting.
And
on Christmas Eve, they would sign off.
Well, John, you're right. John said I gotta air Walter. So we'll talk to you soon.
We'll keep it up.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate
it. Thank you so much.
All right, good deal. Good memories. Yeah, we didn't even get into Mr. Knows It, the children's program. All right, All right, but right now, without a doubt, it is time for Walter's Perspective, sponsored by HearingHealthCenter.com. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That, of course, is the Eldorados on VJ, 1956. And Edward Abner was a co-writer of that. And Jimmy P. wanted to hear it. A Fallen Tear. All right, so 888-876-5593. Going to get back to your votes here in a second. But like I was saying, we got the tabloids, Slime from the Checkout Line. And, of course, I'm all over YouTube, always looking for interesting things. And a complete dearth of psychics who predicted that October 7th was going to have meaning for the Middle East, to say the least. But now they're coming out of the woodworks. And I just, sometimes you just got to laugh. Obviously not at the situation. It's very serious, and the show is not the place to talk about it. But I couldn't help but laugh. There's a Cuban psychic who is weighing in now saying, this new war between Israel and Palestine will not have a good ending. You need a psychic for that? Or I tell you what. 888-876-5593. Of course, some are saying that Nostradamus predicted it, but, whatever is going on in your life, Nostradamus predicted it. You can reach those quatrains any way you want. So, let's see. We've got Sharon in St. Charles voting on the World's Worst Hit Records. What you got for me, Sharon?
Well, the record is Pretty Little Dolly. Now, the only thing I don't know is how much of a hit it was.
It wasn't, but I know the song. And this was big in Chicago only because the woman was from Chicago, and she sang this on Johnny Carson.
Okay, well, I probably watched it, but I'm probably 95% sure that Bob Collins probably played it on his radio show.
I'm sure. I'm positive. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, we're talking before Bob was even in Milwaukee. You know, the pretty little dolly can wet, the pretty little dolly can cry. Yeah, and Mona Aboud was the woman. There's a YouTube clip of her doing it on Johnny Carson that is just hilarious. And, yeah.
Okay.
Dear Santa Claus, my mommy and daddy said that if I was very good, I could have whatever I wanted for Christmas. And it went downhill from there. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm going to count that because I don't think there's anybody in Chicago who doesn't know the Pretty Little Dolly.
yeah. It brought back a lot of memories when, you know, you were talking about greatest hits. And I think, I know I heard it a lot at the time. But I had no idea whether, you know, it was a hit or not.
No, it was absolutely not. But like I say, it's been on the air for so long, so many times, and so many different incarnations in Chicago. And I saw an interview with Mona a couple of years ago. At that point, she was still with us, and I hope she still is. But she took it all in stride, to say the least, and she really enjoyed being on Johnny Carson.
Yeah, it's... So that's, you know, like I said, I wasn't sure whether, you know, it was really a hit, but I know I heard it a lot, you know, but I live around Chicago, so that's probably why, and I listen to WGN a lot.
Sure. No, we're going to count it. And for people who don't know how it ends, which is the funny part, of course, they can look at the clip online. Good deal. Thanks. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right. So, yes, Mona Aboud, the Pretty Little Dolly. Yeah, it was on the Slade label, I think. All right. Oh, man. And I think Jim Rusk wrote that. And I think it does get a certain amount of play every year. Well, you know, there's so many all Christmas stations, some of which start in October, that I don't see why this wouldn't be on their playlist. Look, if the hippopotamus can be, why can't Pretty Little Dolly? All right. So we got Fran and Austin. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh. Oh, well, it just goes to show you what one person hates, another person likes. I like that Pretty Little Dolly song.
Well, yeah, I mean, the ending of it makes it hilarious.
Yeah, when she changes character, well. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And, right, I know it. Carson just lost it when that happened, and it was terrific.
Yeah, but even, you know, the whole song, just that voice of hers and the way she does it. It's just,
right.
She
really
believe me, hilarious.
You couldn't see it, but she looks the part, too, you know? She looks like she's
does she?
Oh, God,
oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it fits, yeah. If nothing else, she looks like a demented kindergarten teacher. So it's just perfect. God, I hope she's not listening. I hope she's not listening. Yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, so. I think the... And I've done that. You know, I shouldn't have said a word because I've been caught so many times saying things on the air, and it turns out the people are listening. And Yeah, I remember at one point Joni James, and I was on KMPC, so I should have known, but it was like her birthday, and I said, I don't think she's with us any longer. And boy, she called. She was with us. But the worst was Carol Jackson, who was one of my all-time favorite records is Who Do You Love by the Sapphires. And
yes, I love that record.
Someone had asked...
I've heard you mention that before.
Yeah,
it's one of my favorites, too.
Yes, I just love that song. And a lot of people think it's a girl group. Well, no, it was Carol and two guys. But in any event, I just loved it. And someone had called, and I was in Philadelphia at the time, and we were talking about it, and they said, you know, I talked about the group, and it was two guys, but the girl was Carol Jackson. Well, whatever happened to Carol Jackson? And I said, I don't know. I think she's a domestic in New Jersey. And... She was listening.
Oh, no.
And she said, I'll have you know I'm a secretary in New Jersey. Well, how far off was I? You know,
really? No, I was just going to say not that far.
Right, right. But, you know, and I didn't say that for any negative. My point on that was that these were people who made these great, great songs, and they wound up getting no credit for it and, you know, usually absolutely no money for it. And so, you know, my point was, you know, she's doing something menial now and probably getting minimum wage when we're all loving this record. But
right. Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And that actually, you know, of course, happened so many times.
Oh, God, yes, yes. And, you know, I played the Cadillacs earlier, Speedo. If you look at all the Cadillacs records, they were all written by Esther Navarro. Well, Esther Navarro was their manager. She didn't write a word of it. It's just she took all of the group's records and called herself the writer.
Oh,
yeah.
That's unconscionable.
Well, it is. It is. I think there was some type of a correction along the way, but nowhere near of what should have happened. And, of course, when the records were out and more hits like Speedo was a huge hit, you know, she was rolling in clover, and they were not.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, you know, that happened so many times, and especially, you know, from what I've read and heard and what I know, a lot of the doo-wop groups really got shafted.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, but part of it was the logic at the time, because these usually were, not that it couldn't happen with big labels, it couldn't, it did, but for the most part, these were independent guys who, you know, came back from World War II and couldn't get hired to do anything else, so they started a record company. And their theory was, these people should be thanking us. They should be lucky. We're giving them hits, and they can make more money when they go out on stage. What do you mean they want royalties? You know, and so they had a completely different take on it, and it's unfortunate, but that was the prevailing logic. So
that's sad.
Yeah, there weren't many that were straight. Ahmet Erdogan was pretty much a straight shooter at Atlantic. He really was. But, you know, all the rest of them, some of them by intent and some of them just because, you know, like poor George Goldner, he was too busy gambling away everything to ever be responsible for anything. But, got Art Rupert Specialty, who sadly recently died. But when I read about him being a philanthropist, I almost lost lunch. I'm like, wait a minute.
So. Usually if someone wants it known or wants to brag about what a great philanthropists they are not. You know, it's just like, you know, people who will say, oh, well, I'm loving and caring,
right
you know, run.
exactly. So yes, all right, so you're gonna vote on the world's worst hits, huh?
Yeah. Okay. I didn't get the death ones in there the last time. No. The Teen Angel.
Okay.
Tell Laura I Love Her.
Right.
Patches. Uh-huh. The one Dickie Lee, not the...
Yeah, right, right. Although that was pretty somber, too. But yes, you're turned down by the river that flows by the cold. Yeah, stands wooden houses with shutters torn down. There lives a girl everybody calls Patchy. Patches. Patches, my darling, from Old Shanty Town. Yes, I remember.
Yep, that All right. one. Yes. Yeah. Actually, both of them, now that I think about it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And it was General Johnson.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was General Johnson who wrote the other Patches, and he refused to sing it on stage. And when people asked him, why wouldn't you sing that? He said, that's not the kind of song you sing to people who were sitting here laughing and drinking and having a good time. It just doesn't work.
Right. You know? That's just like going and hearing my next song, which is... Gilbert O'Sullivan, Alone Again, Naturally.
Oh, yes, there you are. Well, it's better than Claire. All right.
Oh, God, I would all, if you could do an anything by, I would say that on Gilbert O'Sullivan. I don't think he had that many. I think it was that one and Claire and, God, some other one I can't remember, fortunately.
Right, exactly. Fortunately is right. There are things that you just shouldn't revisit. There's no need whatsoever. But, I mean, it wasn't for lack of trying that poor Gilbert O'Sullivan had a few chart records. But, he absolutely, hard to believe, truth be known. So, yeah.
Yeah.
What can I say? And
let's see.
Get down. Wasn't Get Down the third one?
That was it. That was the third one that I couldn't think of.
Yeah.
And it was about a dog, I think. It turned out to be about a dog.
You know, I never listened long enough to find out what it was about. But yeah,
I was captive in somebody's car, probably.
Yeah, but Get Down, yeah. But he did. He put out like a dozen records before he had anything hit. And at least
I'd hate to hear if you know, judging from the ones that hit, I would hate to hear the ones that missed, although sometimes those are actually better than the ones that hit, but
yeah, well, that
not
normally,
in his case, I don't think.
Yeah, right, exactly. But the first thing he ever recorded, and it was on Columbia Records, was What Can I Do? And I thought it was a remake of the Donnie Elbert song. I thought, oh, well, this will be it. It wasn't. But so, yeah. And it was.
Good thing I can't picture him doing that.
Yeah, of course, back then I couldn't picture him doing anything because I didn't know who the hell he was. It was 1968. But it wasn't the right record, to say the least. It was something completely else. But he had a bunch of things. I kid you not. Before he finally got around to 1972 on the MAM label with Alone Again, Naturally.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, Holding Back the Years by Simply Red.
Oh, very nice. Okay.
So, going a little forward there. Let's see. I had a. Anyway, what the tell Laura I Love Her,
yeah.
Patches.
Oh, there's so many. I mean, if you're thinking of those, Give Us Your Blessing. The Ray Peterson version. Of course, Last Kiss. Which I always contend.
Oh, that one too. That one too.
Yeah, I'm never sure whether she was dead in that last kiss or not. But anyway. Yes.
I know, that's a big debate.
It is. These are the important subjects of life, things that wars are fought over, yes. But there were others, believe me, there were so many. Of course, the first one that kicked this off that everybody was aghast about a few years earlier was Death of an Angel. And that was actually banned in 1955. And
it, oh wow,
yeah that was probably a little before your time, but yes, Death of an Angel.
Yeah, I was born in 1955, so
all right, we'll see.
Although I know a lot of songs from the 40s and stuff, so but I don't think I've heard that one.
Oh, that'll be our next bumper returning. It was Donald Woods and the Velairs, and I kid you not, you'd have thought that he was invading small countries. They were just having a fit over Death of an Angel. So so I'll do that. But yes,
I don't know why those songs were so big. And it's, it's funny because I hate to admit that, but back when I was a little girl, I kind of liked Patches.
Well, I never liked Patches, and I wasn't a little girl when it came out, but I liked Laurie because I thought, all right, then I saw a sweater lying upon her grave. Oh, yeah, that's my kind of song. But
I kind of like that song. I would not put it on the worst by any means.
Right.
I kind of like the way it ends.
Exactly.
Yeah, like yourself, I like the way it ends.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was quite all right. But there were tons of those. But yeah, I will absolutely. You'll hate Death of an Angel. I just know. But it was the first one of the group that I can think of anyway. But so many, yes, death songs. Of course, the one that I truly love was not a big hit though. But Dr. Demento played it from time to time. You probably know exactly where I'm going now. Of course, I Want My Baby Back.
I Want My Baby Back. Oh, I love that.
Yeah, right. When he pay dirt. He hits the coffin. He opens it up. He gets in.
Pay dirt.
Yeah, right.
I do that sometimes. It's funny because around here, when Gary and I are looking for something, or something like that, and we find it, we both do that.
Yeah, pay dirt.
Bam. Pay dirt.
Right, exactly. Then he climbs in the coffin and closes it. Then the muffled. Now I got my
muffled
baby.
Oh.
Yeah. So yeah. So you can't hate that. But anyway.
No, that is just so bad. It's good.
Exactly. Exactly. I dig you, baby.
I dig you so much.
Yeah. All right. Fine choices.
You hear the shovel hitting the dirt.
Well, that was it. You do, yes. And then you hear the squeaking of the coffin lid. Yeah.
Squeaking of the coffin door.
Yeah. Jimmy Cross. All right. I thought it was a masterpiece myself, but it never was a hit, unfortunately.
Yeah, I never heard it until the Dr. Demento show.
Oh, no, I heard it when it came out. There were stations that played it, but it never was a hit.
Wow.
Yeah. All right. Well, all good choices. And I'll play you Death of an Angel next.
I will be back. I know I've got more.
I'm counting on it. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Rob.
Good deal.
Bye.
So, yes. All right. And we will have Eduardo and Mark and Andrew and Lori and Johnny. Yeah, Johnny and Austin. Oh, man. We're going to talk radio, I hope. We'll see. All that and more coming up on WGN Radio.
My baby's gone and left me all alone. My baby's gone and she left me alone. So alone, I want I still remember the day she went away. That was the day my angel left me to stay.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Well, there it is, 1955 on the Flip label. Donald Woods and the Vel-Airs, and Randolph Bryant was a Vel-Air, and Willie Butternut Graham, and a couple others, I think Ira Foley. But in any event, Donald Woods wrote that with Doris Woods, who I think was his wife, and I think she's the one who's having the histrionics in the middle of that. But what's interesting, Flip Records was a great little label. The Furtegs had it in Los Angeles, and that's where Richard Berry had done the original Louie Louie, which Richard Berry, of course, wrote in the Kingsman, later copied. But what was interesting is I think someone at the Kingsman must have had like some discography for Flip Records because it wasn't only Louie Louie. Sure enough, 1964, the Kingsmen decide that they're going to do Death of an Angel.
My baby's gone and she left me to stay. My baby's gone and left me. My baby's gone away.
All right, yeah, it's just something ridiculous about that. But nonetheless, when this came out, it really was. It was an uproar, the death of an angel. And, you know, it's going to, they somehow said it's going to increase teen suicide. I'm thinking only if you make the teens listen to this. That's the only chance that you have to have that come true. But in any event, Flip Records, the Furtegs said, all right, well, we'll re-release it, which they did 2 years later in 1957. And then it no longer was Death of an Angel. It was now My Baby's Gone. Same record, but it nonetheless, it was a big hit, sort of, and it qualifies if you hate it. As far as I Want My Baby Back, I can't imagine there's anybody who missed it. But the interesting thing about this is it came out in 1965 on Tolly, Right, VJ, exactly. And Jimmy Cross was from Dothan, Alabama, and died. He was only 39 years old. He had a heart attack in Los Angeles in like 1978. But I won't, you know, you can look it up if you don't know it. But it's a truly, truly fine, fine death record.
Know where to begin. I remember we were cruising home from the Beatles concert. I'd had such a wonderful evening sitting there watching my baby screaming and tearing her hair out and carrying on. She was so full of life then. Well, we were about 3 miles from home when all of a sudden it started to rain. And I do mean rain.
Yeah, it's just a classic. Now, what's interesting is who wrote it. Jimmy Cross did not write this this wonderful tune. Perry Botkin Jr. did. I am not making that up. He actually co-wrote it with Gil Garfield, and you're saying who? Gil Garfield was in the Cheers, and you remember them. We should. In any event, yeah, Perry Botkin Jr. is nowhere on his, you know, when he's having like Nadia's theme or whatever, nowhere is it saying that, you know, I want my baby back. But nonetheless, that's the deal. All right, so got a Grammy and all that. Not for that. Okay, so anyway, let's see what we're doing here, and I'm being too long of well, I'll just shut up and talk to let's see, get some votes. I believe we'll get some votes from Lori in Chicago. All right, Lori, what are you voting for? Lori left us. Well, she tried. All right, she was hanging around a while. Apologies to that. Mark and Aurora's got votes. So Mark, you still with us?
Yeah. Yes, I am, and I'm following up on a couple of previous calls. One, I'm sure you know that Canned Heat did We've Got to Get Together, and they had a different lead singer by then from the one they had for Going Up the Country and On the Road Again.
No, you're talking about
Let's... And I like that version of their... I like their version of that song.
You're talking about Let's Work Together.
Yeah, Let's Work Together.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I do.
And they had a different lead singer by then. And then the other thing I wanted to ask about was you mentioned the cost of producing a strongly powered radio station. I once
television, and not producing.
I talked with a radio guy, and I've always wondered if he was pulling my leg. He was at a Grand Rapids station on 93.7, and his name was something Rickards. I was acquainted with Reese Rickards, but this was his son, and I've forgotten his first name. But he said that their station, their radio station on 93.7, was once on 300,000 watts.
But yeah, 320,000 watts. That's BCT.
Okay. Which one?
BCT, WBCT, Grand Rapids. And
what was the name of Reese Rickards' son?
Oh, I have no idea.
But, yeah, but his voice sounded uncannily like his father.
Yeah, but anyway, they had 320.
So he wasn't pulling my leg about the 320.
No, but you see, that's not much wattage compared to a UHF station. We're talking about 4 million watts.
Million watts, I know.
So,
yeah. But I did. It was interesting that I once got that Grand Rapids station in Aurora when other stations as equally far away were not coming in strong. So,
yeah.
I could believe the story, but here are my votes. I've got, I'm going to second Run, Joey, Run. And then I've got two jungle songs, the Chimichangas, and I'm only kidding. I know they're the Chacachas,
yeah.
And they've got their Jungle Fever. Right. I'll vote for that one. And the other one I'll vote for is Kool & the Gang, Jungle Boogie.
Okay.
Yeah. It probably won't make the top 10.
Well, nonetheless, it qualifies.
It's a lot of grunting and apparent fist fighting for absolutely nothing.
All right.
Oh, one more. This is I almost don't want to vote for this because I think it's kind of cute, but I also think it's kind of hokey. Chirpy Chirpy Cheep Cheep by
Mac and Katie Kassoon. Yep. It's had some votes.
I decided I got to vote for that one.
Okay, very good. Very good.
So that's it for me.
All right.
See you on Monday.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting you mentioned BCT, because I'll tell you who else was grandfathered in with higher power was Wood FM. So what I'm really wondering about, why Grand Rapids? Maybe I can find something out. I'll let you know. All right.
You said WBCT?
Yeah, but also Wood in Grand Rapids was grandfathered in with higher power. So, what the heck is the...
I don't think either of them has that power level now.
Well, I'm not sure. You can keep them as long as you haven't made any real changes. But, yeah.
Although Reese's son said they had to lower their power because it was just costing too much.
Well, absolutely. Well, that's why in the early days you even had, you know, stations that were licensed to have 100,000 watts that really were only broadcasting with 17,000 because they didn't want to pay the power bill. But yeah, Wood had WOD had about 265,000 watts, and they're not Wood FM anymore. They were an easy listening station, Schulke. I think they're SRW now. But anyway, why Grand Rapids? Whoa. I never thought about this before. Now I got to find out. All right, thanks.
Maybe because they bounce over Lake Michigan?
I don't know. I'll see if I can find out. Thanks. Yeah, I don't know. What was it about? Thanks. I'm looking for J.T. Anderton, who's a good friend of mine, and he was living last year in Cincinnati, but he's not there anymore, and I want to find him because this guy would know, no doubt about it. So, J.T., if you're out there listening, let us know where you are. I've heard through the grapevine that he's in the Shreveport area, but I don't know. I might have to start calling all the Andertons in the phone book. And don't think I won't. All right, so we'll get to Eduardo, we'll get to Johnny, we'll get to Andrew, we'll get to Stephanie, and we'll get to you two coming up. If your votes don't come in tonight, now I want you to know that, remember, we've got next Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And so on the air. Off the air, it's iffy. You can email if you want. I don't guarantee I'll see it, but you can. And that's Raleigh@Raleigh.net. And you can leave voicemail if you want, and I don't guarantee I'll hear it. But but if I do, I'll count it. So let's that. But if you call the show, you're guaranteed to be on the list. All right, thanks. We'll pick it up right there on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, we only have about 5 minutes left, so we'll forego the bumper. Oh, I could find more of the world's worst hit records, but you'll be voting on them. Take your votes, and of course, as again, we'll do this through and including next Wednesday night, and then we'll compile the top 10. It is cumulative, so if you've heard somebody mention it and you hate it, by God, you got to second it. That's all there is to it. Because right now, at least from where I'm sitting, I see one of those, you know, 19-way ties, and we got to break those. So, Stephanie and Madison, what do you got?
Hey there. First of all, a couple Christmas. Well, I absolutely cannot stand this Christmas song. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Andy Williams usually sings it, but this is the one. You talk about sleazy songs involving blind people. This is a flip side of Scotch and Soda, the song Jane, Jane, Jane.
Yeah, not
Jane,
a hit.
Jane, Jane, Jane.
Not a hit.
Yeah. No. Oh, okay. But it's a flip side of a hit.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's got to be a hit. That's the rules.
Okay. Just brought it up as a really horrible example.
Yeah, truly.
You have a good one, all right?
All right.
To the end of your show.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
You got it.
All right.
Take care.
So, yeah, that's the only thing. It's got to be a hit. It can be any decade, any genre, but it's got to be a hit. So it can't be an album cut, and it can't be something, you know. Now, the exceptions, like I said, Pretty Little Dolly or whatever, things that were played ad nauseum in Chicago, they would count because they're that well known. But other than that, there aren't exceptions. So we got Eduardo in Tampa. What's up, Eduardo?
Yeah, I'm going to be brief, Raleigh. Because Iceland's about to have an eruption that's probably going to ground flights overseas.
Oh, yes, Iceland.
But
will.
It reminded me this week Standard Illinois had a 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I was in Chicago, I felt a vibration for mm-hmm. 1 or 2 seconds
mm-hmm.
some years back ago.
Yeah. Well, the Midwest has all sorts of fault lines. In fact, Missouri has a ton of them. There's a fault line underneath Manhattan. So the idea that only California is going to get earthquakes, not at all.
Right. I think it's New Madras. Is that right?
Well, New Madras certainly is a big fault line, yes. Right. But it is interesting to watch Iceland. Let's talk next week about it. By then, I think it'll probably have blown.
Definitely. Okay.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it. Okay. All right. So 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, Johnny in Austin, I'm so sorry. So we're going to have to, I guess, postpone radio for till next week.
Oh, that's not a problem. I heard a great song that I'd never heard before on that Beach Waves radio today called I'll Come Running by the Sand Band.
Okay, yeah.
Featuring, do you know that song?
Yes, yes. It's a Myrtle Beach song. It's not an oldie anywhere else. Yes.
It was a great song. I couldn't find it anywhere.
Really? Okay, I will look over the weekend to see what I can come up with on that. And we were listening to Kathleen today. By the way, I thought about you because I know you like that song, and it's so funny.
Wally Lewis. Yeah.
Yes, right, exactly. And John is listening, and he said, "Why is he saying gasoline?" I said, "No." Yeah, and I thought
were you
about
listening to the one with the chorus in it, or the solo?
Yeah, no, the chorus. Yeah.
Hey, listen, I got a Jerry Butler double CD the other day, and it had a song on there that I hate to admit I'd never heard before. It's a two-disc set on Charlie. The song's called Chi-Town by Jerry Butler.
Yeah.
It's really great. You might play it sometimes.
I will do that next week, and I'm counting on you calling.
Okay, I'll call earlier next week.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks. Appreciate it. All right,
sure.
So that's it. And apologies to Andrew, let me at least say hello while I'm saying goodbye. So, Andrew, will you call me next week?
I will, I have a vote. Okay, Hound Dog by Elvis Presley.
Oh, very fine. Very, very fine. And
he hated that song.
Yeah, well, Elvis ruined a great record because the Bama Thornton version was wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
So, yes, Hound Dog.
Very, very quickly, what was the station you guys were talking about that canceled Johnny Carson for a hot minute?
It was this station that was in Presque Isle, Maine. It was the only one there.
Presque Isle, Maine.
Yeah, Presque, Maine. Presque Isle. It's a place. It's
very cool, and I'll call you next week.
Okay, good. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks. Yeah, oh man, the entire town council got voted out for that. All right, so on that note, that's a wrap. We thank Adam for keeping us on the air. I thank John for screening your calls. Above all, I thank you for calling. That's what makes all the difference. And so we'll reconvene with trivia on Monday. Tomorrow night's a replay of trivia, but then live Monday night will be Monday Night Trivia, and I'll be ready for you. Until then, I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.